Welcome to the Jet Setting Family Travel Podcast, where our mission is to motivate you to travel more together. Whether that's short weekend trips close to home or adventures all over the world, we have got you covered. On this week's episode, I am excited to bring on Eric Stowen, also known as Travel Babbo. Eric is a very accomplished family travel blogger, and he's been going at it for years. So I was really curious about what it was that got him initially started, how he transitioned from a career in healthcare to one of family travel journalism, and what are some of the cool places that he's been to with his family. He's gone literally all over the world multiple times. So I will cut right through the chase, and let's get started with our interview with Eric. Hey everyone, it is my honor to introduce Eric Stowen, the award-winning author and journalist behind Travel Babbo. Hey Eric, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you doing?
Doing well. And you know, I'm just really looking forward to this conversation because you have been an inspiration to a lot of us that are kind of aspiring to become travel journalists. And I wanted to get started with just understanding a little bit more of kind of the story before you started Travel Babbo. So can you not only introduce yourself, but also kind of give us a quick kind of history of how you transitioned from a career in healthcare into one of full-time family travel journalism?
Absolutely. So I've always loved traveling my whole life, but especially starting in college when I studied abroad in Italy for a year, subsequently studied abroad in Germany and then Norway for a couple of summers. Just as I started meeting people, seeing the world, I would meet more people. They would invite me to their countries. I would take them up on that. And I couldn't imagine that everyone wasn't doing that. Like it was perfect seeing the world. Obviously, I don't need to tell you. And my wife kind of grew up traveling as well. And so once we had kids, my oldest daughter's 13 now, so 13 years ago, we kind of kept traveling. When the kids were infants, toddlers, whatever, we would get on planes, and maybe it wouldn't be that much fun, but we would do it, and you get to your destination, and you have fun for a couple of weeks or whatever it is. So at the time, though, I was in healthcare, which I had gone into right after graduate school back in the mid-90s. I think I was good at it. I liked my company a lot, but I never had a passion for it. And so randomly in 2012, I opened up Condé Nast Traveler, and they had a page dedicated to their Photo of the Year contest. They had this $25,000 dream trip photo contest every year. And honestly, if I ever dreamt of going on a trip, we'd just kind of book it and go. So I don't know that I really had a dream destination, but I loved the magazine and I loved the travel writers there. And there were so many people there that had inspired me over the years and who I just thought, wow, if I ever, you know, wound up on a plane next to this person for hours, it would just be the coolest thing ever. And so I entered this contest more, I think, to maybe make a connection at the magazine and maybe meet some of these people than actually thinking that I would win. But lo and behold, out of 21,000 entrants, I won the photo contest. And so they set up a fun $25,000 trip for us to Florence, Italy. But beyond that, I made an excuse to be in New York with my three-year-old, and we stopped by the Condé Nast offices, and all of a sudden, you know, I had the ability to call them and say, hey, can I meet you? And had lunch with one of the travel writers who I had always admired, Wendy Perrin. And just being in their offices, touring it, meeting all these people, I was like, this is so much cooler than healthcare. Like, this is where my passion is. And so, but I didn't do anything. I didn't really think about switching jobs or anything else. And a year or two later, I was my wife kept kind of encouraging me to quit. She could sense that healthcare just absolutely wasn't what I was meant to be doing the rest of my life. And so I just quit suddenly one day and was like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I called Wendy at Condé Nast and I said, okay, I just quit my job. Any thoughts? And she's like, well, have you seen travel blogs? And I had not really even heard of travel blogs. I had probably, you know, Google or found a couple through Google when I had been searching for unique things around the world, but I had never thought about it as anything other than a place to kind of document travels. But I looked up a bunch of the ones that Wendy recommended, and I thought, wow, I travel more than these people. I could start writing about this. So I started a website just kind of thinking, okay, I'll document everything. maybe inspire other people. I think that that was what I really wanted to do is to you know, those families that are at Disneyland spending $8,000, $10,000 on a week, which they can do, and anyone can spend their money how they want. But I always wanted to kind of take them aside and say, hey, you could spend half that and go to Costa Rica or Colombia, or, you know, pick a place, Thailand, and show your kids a different culture and kind of broaden their minds. And I was like, oh, maybe if I start a website, I'll have a platform to do that. So I started a website back in kind of the end of 2014, and it took off. And all of a sudden, at the end of 2014, I started an Instagram account, and people started following me, and brands started contacting me, wanting to hire me to travel places or promote products or whatever. And I don't know when I quit my healthcare job that I ever intended for this to be my new career, but it kind of goes to show that if you follow your passions, you never know where it's going to lead. So, you know, 3.5-4 years later, I was making more money than I was ever in healthcare even, and having a lot more fun, and literally getting paid to travel around the world with my kids. So it's been a fun ride.
Yeah, that's definitely the dream for a lot of us that have kind of the same aspirations. And I'm sure from 2014 to now, you have learned so much about the business, and you were, you know, pretty much not coming from a journalism and writing background, and being able to get to where you are today with all of the awards that you've won, the kind of highlights that you've received in the press. Is there anything you wish you would have known back in 2014 that maybe some of our listeners could benefit from if they're interested in starting a family travel blog as well?
I don't know that there's anything that I wish I would have known, but the very first conference that I ever went to at the beginning of 2015 was the TBEX conference. It was over in Spain. And meeting a bunch of bloggers and seeing the speeches, the sessions about different topics, I think there were several that really guided me on my way and led to me kind of developing a 5-year business plan and sketching out how I wanted to make money and how I didn't. And at that point, I just kind of realized that you even could make money doing this. But I saw what everyone was doing, and I saw the people that were awesome at SEO, you know, at creating content that would be found by Google that would then get money through advertising. I saw people making a lot of money from Amazon affiliates and hotel affiliates and getting paid every time somebody, you know, clicks off their website and books something or buys something. And which is absolutely fine, but I always thought it would be far cooler to become a brand ambassador for companies or destinations and to really do campaigns and to be able to be traveling with my kids and writing about it more than sitting behind a computer and really making sure everything on my website is perfect to be making passive income. So it's not an argument that I ever have, because if people want passive income, it's a great way to go as well. I simply chose to keep my website free of advertising, to keep it free of affiliate links, really, to say no to a lot of the things that were being offered to me. I accepted a pair of shoes early on, and I thought, oh my God, they want to sell me shoes. This is awesome. All I have to do is post on Instagram. And then I realized that I could say yes to that stuff all the time and have a whole closet full of stuff that I don't need, and so many pieces of luggage that I don't need and everything else. And it wouldn't help me pay a single bill, that all I would be doing is getting tons of free stuff. So I started saying no to everything that was coming in and no to free trips, and realizing that likewise, I could be traveling every single week with my family for free. And not that I'd want to take my kids out of school for that, but that still doesn't help pay bills. So I kind of declined all that stuff and was fine making zero income for about 2 or 3 years. And waiting for the really cool offers and building my authority and giving people a reason to follow me and to trust me, where I wasn't constantly trying to sell them something. So, I think that would be my best advice. I mean, people can do whatever they want as far as choosing passive income, going after destinations or whatever, but, you know, make sure that you have something to offer to destinations if you are wanting to provide marketing to them, and don't be afraid to say no to things, and keep your website as clean as you want it to be. You know, it's your site. You can do anything. You don't have to listen to any blogger who has a course trying to sell you on you know, all the whatever their 20 you know, videos or whatever telling you how to be a blogger, because it's kind of a lot of stuff that people have to figure out on their own based on their own skills and what they're good at and how they want to make money.
And one of the really interesting things that you mentioned was that it took about 2 years for you to, you know, start making a sustainable income from the blog. And a lot of people kind of tend to give up during that time frame. So what was it that kind of kept you going during those 2 years? Were you seeing steady growth? Was it encouragement from your family, from, you know, the companies that you had the potential to work with in the future as well?
Yeah, I think I was doing a lot of networking, and it's exactly what you say, that I met so many cool people at my first Tbex in Spain, and 6 months later, a lot of them had already dropped off and gone back to work, or you know, they weren't pursuing blogging full-time, and I realized at that conference that really everyone who's really making good money, and people were pretty almost open about numbers and revenue and everything else, that it took them 4 to 5 to 6 years to get to that point. And so from the beginning, I didn't have any false hopes of doing that a lot faster. And I was networking all the time. I was going to ITB in Berlin, which is the largest travel trade show in the world, and different conferences around the world, and meeting, yes, a lot of bloggers, but brands and destinations and people that visit Norway or visit Greenland or you know, you name it. And so I realized that, you know, in business, it's all about who you know. And in travel blogging is the same thing. And as I was making all these connections, I started really pursuing the ones that I thought, you know, I might be able to get a brand ambassadorship with, and working on numbers and figuring out, okay, what is it fair to, you know, propose to a company based on what I think I can deliver to them? I mentioned earlier, nobody should be giving you anything for free. If anyone is working with you, it's because you are returning more to them than they are paying you. That's the only thing that makes sense. And I guess that comes from my business background. But I was developing my authority and my social media networks to be able to really make that return. And I saw that happening. I saw that the brands interested in working with me, whether it was on free trips or paid trips, the offers just kept getting better and better and better. And I realized, wow, I think I could speed this up from 5 years and did it in about 3.5.
I think it's really important also just in the digital age that we are now and understanding that you are a writer, but you are a digital publication. I think people can get caught up in just, hey, I'm going to pitch and send emails to people and see if they respond. But understanding that making those face-to-face connections in a conference, that's something that we're going to be trying to do this year as well, since we haven't been to a conference yet. And we're hoping to be able to make those kind of connections that will push us to the next level. So, you know, thanks for that tip on going to the conferences. We'll be making sure to check the calendar and see what kind of value we can get from those.
Yeah, and there's so many conferences that attract bloggers and brands, and those are the ones to look for. And so that, yeah, you're not just networking with your peers, which is great because, you know, when a brand comes to me and says, hey, we loved working with you. Do you have recommendations on who we should contact for our next campaign? I'm going to be recommending people that I follow, and usually I'm following people because I met them in person. And so that definitely, you know, I think helps as far as business goes. But then, yeah, constantly meeting brands. And there are some brands that I've met with 4 or 5 or 6 times over the years at different conferences. And at this point now, we're lining up campaigns because they know I'm in it for the long haul. The Visit Britons, the whatever at the first Tbex, you know, I know they get burnt out after, you know, going down the road with some blogger and really trying to work out a campaign, and then that person is no longer blogging. And so when you see and meet with somebody 3, 4, 5, 6 times over the years, they know that you are in it for the long term, that this is your career, that there is very little risk on their part for working with you. And I think that gets lost a lot, that people are like, oh, no, I don't want to invest in going to that event or whatever. And it's huge.
Yeah, and people definitely are hoping to get that instant gratification of, hey, I just started and, you know, I want that overnight success, because that's what it seems like happens online, when it's really people behind the scenes are working countless hours every day for 2 years to up to 5 years to actually make, you know, this career and this dream happen. So, you know, it's really enlightening to hear that it does take the work, it does take the connections, it does take the grit to keep going through those kind of non-revenue generating years, and to be able to see where you are now making more money than you were in your previous career is inspiring. So thank you, Eric.
Absolutely.
switching gears a little bit into more of the travels. You know, I think the listeners and myself in particular are very interested to hear where you've been. And one of the more unique things that you do with your family is you take one-on-one trips with each of your kids, right? So where did that idea kind of come from? And how has that kind of changed over the years as your kids have started growing up?
So how many kids do you have?
I have two, a three-year-old and a six-year-old.
Okay, so I'm sure you've realized that the six-year-old, even at one or two or three, seemed so mature, and your younger child just doesn't, because, you know, when it's the first child, you're like so impressed, and you're like, wow, you know, and it's funny, I have three kids, and so I've noticed that all the way down the line, where it just seems like, wow, my oldest was so mature at two, and my youngest just isn't, and it's all it is my perception. It's not the child. And so when my first daughter was three and came home from pre-K and had been studying Antarctica and penguins, she said that she wanted to go to Antarctica to see the penguins. So I said, okay, I do too. Antarctica would be a great place to go. But like, literally, I was great going. So I called up National Geographic Expeditions because I knew that they led trips there and that they were fairly family friendly. And I asked them for an age range and they said, minimum 8 years old. For Antarctica, simply based on kids being able to entertain themselves on the ship at night and crossing the Drake Passage, and being able to kind of follow some of the lectures and appreciate where you are in the world, appreciate some of the science going on, the lecturers that they're going to hear, that type of thing. And so I totally trusted them on that. So I hung up and I told my daughter we would go to Antarctica as soon as she turned eight, and we did. But at that point, she was, you know, almost four, and that was like 4 years away. And I was like, oh, well, and in my head, I had just been traveling with her. Like, oh, that would have been so much fun to like go and have an adventure. So I said, well, where else do you want to go that's not Antarctica? And she's like, how about Australia? Because she has seen it on the Wonder Pets cartoon. And I don't know, the Wonder Pets were saving a koala or something. And the Sydney Opera House was there. And she thought Australia looked really cool for the animals and the opera house. And I thought, sure, cool. I had been to Australia once or twice before. And so literally I got on my computer and I yelled to my wife. I was like, can I take Evelyn to Australia? And she's like, sure. So I booked it. And right after Evelyn turned four, I took her out of, I guess it was still pre-K, for a week. And we went down to Australia and she got to hold a koala and feed wallabies. And it was the coolest. It was great. It was so much fun doing this and spending time with her and seeing Sydney in a different way than I had before, because I had to think through it from a kid perspective. Like, what's entertaining for a kid? What is she going to like? And then the next year I said, okay, where do you want to go this year? And it just started. And so, like I said, we went to Antarctica when she was eight, but otherwise I just kind of asked her every year, and it was based on, you know, school stuff or what she would see on TV or whatever that kind of inspired her destination choices. And so then when my son was four, I said, okay, where do you want to go? And my youngest daughter as well, you know, where do you want to go? What are your passions? And so I now do it 2 to 3 times a year. The kids can opt out if they want. And my 13-year-old at this point has opted out a couple years in a row because she would rather be at home with her friends. And I never want travel to be less fun for them. I'm not going to insist that they go somewhere with me if they just don't want to. But the invitation is totally there. And so my son and youngest daughter are always thinking through where they're going to want to go the next year and trying to figure out, okay, can they add on destinations to it? Maybe there's somewhere that we want to do as a separate one-on-one trip, which is fine. There are no hard and fast rules other than that I love traveling with them. And when it's one-on-one, it's such cool bonding. I love, like I said, seeing places through their eyes for the first time. And there's less fighting because there aren't the three kids together. So there's really no fighting and it's a far better, I think, environment than when all three kids are along and it's a hot day or something. And it's just, you know, they would be fighting at home and now they're fighting in Greece or in Paris or wherever. And it's less than fun sometimes. So I love the one-on-one stuff.
So you do one of those each with each of your children, if they're willing to. And how many trips do you take as a family, you know, nowadays per year, I guess?
Usually probably I would say two cool trips, like international complicated itineraries every summer. And then you're talking about Thanksgiving break, winter break, spring break. So I'd say 4 to 5.
Mm-hmm. So basically every time that the kids are out of school, you are out and about exploring.
Correct. And sometimes it's easy and it's just a quick trip to Colorado, and sometimes it's Mexico or Portugal or Maldives. It's whatever somebody suggests based on either a place that they've gone one-on-one that they really want to take their siblings back to and impress them with. Or that was the case with this Maldives resort that my son and I went to about 2 years ago. We just loved it. And so when they got out of school early on December 14th last year for Christmas, we were like, well, let's take the girls over and show them this resort that was just amazing. And so we did. So yeah, inspiration can come from anywhere. But yeah, in general, we max out school breaks because the kids are in a normal school and they don't want to miss school, which is fine.
And do you have any particular trips where you had some kind of unexpected impact, where your kids really were drawn to a location, or you were kind of blown away and you kind of experienced something that you weren't expecting?
I think two answers to that. First is yes. My daughter, my youngest daughter, for her one-on-one trip at 6 chose Australia, and then at 7 and 8 chose Japan. And the first time she chose Japan, I was intimidated. I had traveled around southern Japan with National Geographic at one point and never really thought that it was that family friendly, at least the places we were staying, the foods we were eating. I had spent one day in Tokyo once on like a 12-hour layover and was utterly confused when I was getting around the city and I couldn't find anything in English. And when she said she wanted to go to Tokyo for a week, yeah, it kind of threw me into action. And I was like, okay, well, I'll do this. You know, it's an adventure and it'll be as easy or difficult as it is. And we went and I loved it. She and I just absolutely did everything in Tokyo. Then we went back last year and did it again. And plus went down to Kyoto. And I've become so comfortable in Japan, and she has as well. She's loved Japan for years anyways, the language and the anime and all of the different elements over there. And so, yeah, I think that's one place that we've fallen in love with, and it's only because of my daughter asked to go there. But I think getting back to your question, the bigger answer is no, as far as there aren't really many things that I can pinpoint that have been mind-blowing, life-changing, you know, really influential things. More than that, it's that the kids in some combination have been to 54 countries, and it's every train trip, it's every conversation with a taxi driver, it's every guided tour where we learn about the guide and the city or the food or whatever, and all of that has combined to make my kids who they are. And they mention it, and it was like, oh, tonight I wish we were eating that honey cake from Prague, or just all these little things. And it's giving them confidence in languages and seeing how other people live. And so I don't think that there have been that many just amazing one-off things that I could mention, but really it's every time we've gone through the slums of Mumbai, you know, really to show the kids how the you know, half the world lives. But you know, all the little things and the meals and everything else, I think that's the bigger impact that it's had for us.
That's amazing to hear that you can have so many unique experiences and you can learn so many different things that you weren't even expecting during a trip. So in terms Absolutely. Of your future plans for this year, what do you have going on this year in terms of family trips, one-on-one trips?
Family is mainly going to be Turkey and Greece this summer. It was just going to be Greece. Then Turkish Tourism reached out wanting to do a campaign with me, and we had been wanting to go to Turkey at some point. And so since we were needing to go over to Greece anyways, or planning on Greece anyways, we simply changed it around and planned about 10 or 11 days in Turkey this summer. The PR firm for Turkish Tourism is organizing for us, which just looks amazing. They're handling all the details. And then we're going to fly straight from there to Paros, Greece for like 4 or 5 days and end in Athens. So we'll be doing part of our Greek itinerary, but mainly Turkey, and we're really looking forward to it. After that, I already have my son's one-on-one trip booked to the Faroe Islands with a quick stop in Reykjavik, which I'm totally looking forward to. Faroe Islands are fairly unknown, and I really like going to those places with my kids and not having, you know, Iceland or Costa Rica or some of the more popular places. Because I feel like there's a lot of over-tourism at this point, and it's too easy as a travel blogger to fall into that and to see the places on Instagram and want to go there too. So we'll be doing Faroe Islands. But then he was kind of thinking through the year and that he wasn't going to be adding any new countries at all this year. We went to Mexico for spring break. We went to Colorado for winter break. Faroe Islands are part of Denmark, so he's already been to Denmark. And I'm like, okay, well, what do we want to do? And he had mentioned Vietnam. I was like, okay, well, what if in early July, before we even go to the Faroe Islands, we go over and we see Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia? And I've been to Vietnam and Cambodia before, but never Laos. And he's great with it. So I'm working on planning that right now. Just for fun, just kind of as a bonus trip, because it's not expensive. And I would love to see those places through his eyes. After that, let's see. Next month, my daughter and I have a campaign in Salt Lake City, which, again, I'm looking forward to because it doesn't have to be exotic. I've never been to Salt Lake City. So we're working with Visit Utah on that. Later in the summer, I think we're going to be visiting Manitoba, Canada on a campaign. Into the fall, my daughter chose Australia, kind of going full circle for her annual trip this year, my youngest daughter. So we will zip off to Australia, and we're going to try to see some new places this year, Mackay region specifically, to see some kangaroos and wallabies on the beach. So I feel like I haven't been planning that much, but I guess saying all that out loud, it's a pretty good year we have planned.
That is an incredible set of adventures that you've got planned, and we're excited to continue to follow along. So kind of wrapping up, where can listeners find and follow along on your adventures?
I am Travel Babbo everywhere, B-A-B-B-O. Instagram is probably my favorite social outlet. Facebook I post on every once in a while, and my blog is travelbabbo.com, or even shorter, just Babbo, B-A-B-B-O.com will get you there as well.
That's amazing. We'll definitely link all of those links onto our show notes. So thank you so much, Eric, for being a part of the show today. You have an incredibly inspiring story, and we can't wait to continue to see where you keep on traveling with your kids. And, you know, we are glad that you are here in this space, motivating other families to travel more together.
Thank you much. Yeah, I love it. I love inspiring people. I love that I've kind of created a career out of this where literally I get to travel with my kids and write about it. And I wouldn't say that I'm a journalist. You used the word journalist before. I'd say I'm more a marketer at this point, or I hate the word influencer, but really, yeah, I want to influence travel decisions. I want to influence the decision to travel in the first place and get people to kind of branch out a little bit and maybe push it too far and go around the world with my kids in 2 weeks just to show it can be done. But maybe that inspires somebody to finally, book that trip to Paris or Bali or something, you know, that's a lot easier and a lot simpler. And so I think that's part of my MO too is kind of going a little bit crazy on some of these trips to get people not necessarily to do the same trips, but to just go somewhere with their kids and show them a different culture, a different part of the world.
Well, that is great to hear. So thank you so much, Eric. We look forward to seeing your travels. And, you know, hopefully if anybody that's listening is interested, they can feel free to reach out to you as well. I know that you're very active on social media on all the accounts that you listed. So if you have any questions for Eric, just make sure to send him an email, send him a direct message on Instagram, Twitter, etc., right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you very much, Rod.
Thank you once again, Eric, for joining me on the show today. If you're curious about what Eric has been up to recently, make sure that you go check him out at travelbabbo.com. That's travelbabbo.com, or you can find him anywhere on social media at travelbabbo. On next week's episode, we have a really exciting show coming for you. We've recently alluded that we spent 2 weeks in the Argentinian and Chilean Patagonia region, and we can't wait to share everything that we learned about our amazing trip there. We got to see some of the most incredible glaciers, mountains, and lakes that we have ever seen. And we can't wait to tell you how it is that we got there, what we did, how we did it with our two young kids, and any tips that we have if you are planning a next vacation, which we really think should be to Patagonia. So thank you for listening. If you have any questions or want to get a hold of us, you know where to find us. We are at The Jet Setting Family on social media, or you can email us at hello@thejetsettingfamily.com. So until next time, happy jet setting.
The Podglomerate, a Sonic Universe. ever wonder if they were listening to you? So did Al Franken. Yep, that Al Franken. He was just on our podcast impersonating his former Senate colleagues in the name of privacy.
What the Hack with Adam Levin will make you feel more chill about the unchill things that happen online and off, with easy-to-understand tips to make your life a little less hackable.
Join us as we look at the ways people get scammed and hacked. What the Hack with Adam Levin is a weekly cyber true crime show that unravels a fresh new hell every Monday.
What the Hack with me, Adam Levin, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Jennifer Lincoln, board-certified OBGYN, and you may know me from social media where I spend a lot of my time educating about everything reproductive health. This podcast is called Let's Talk About Down There, and that's what I'm doing. I am talking about down there with no shame, no stigma, a lot of fun, and a lot of education. And why? Because when we talk about these things, we educate and we empower ourselves. Call in, leave a question, and know that it's okay to have questions about your body, and we're going to answer them.